Welcome to the For the Church podcast, another great gospel-centered resource from Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. My name is Jared Wilson. I'm an assistant professor of pastoral ministry and author in residence at Midwestern Seminary. And I'm here, as always, with my friend and my colleague and my co-host, Ross Ferguson.
There you go. There's a big delay.
Get a longer delay every time, yeah. Got to draw it out, make it dramatic.
So when this podcast comes out, we're looking towards the tail end of the summer, I think.
Does it? Okay.
I don't know.
It's like July, so there's another month left.
Yeah. Summer plans for you?
What are my summer plans? Doing a little bit of travel, but mainly working on my dissertation.
Okay.
By the time this comes out, I should at least have a couple chapters.
Okay. So if you're listening to this, feel free to on social media, double check if Jared is holding to his word. We're going to do a little bit of traveling as well. Yeah. Not a
you
huge
usually
amount.
Do what are like the state parks or the national parks?
Yeah,
or
so
what
it's
do you do?
Yellowstone National Park this year.
Yeah, okay.
So it's about 3,500 miles round trip we're going to do. So that's on the list to do, but we'll probably go away a couple of nights in different places. I'm the type of person that I can run 100 miles an hour for a while, and then I just need kind of solid breaks. And I feel like this summer I'm needing a little bit of some solid breaks. So yeah, we'll do a little bit of travel. But what we mainly do in the summer is right at the beginning of the summer, we haven't done it yet at the recording, but we drop a list with the girls. We just say like, what's some of the things you want to do? And it will range from, you know, we really want to go to Chick-fil-A, to do the library, read a book, a thon through it, to I really want to go and see, you know, a basketball game or whatever it is. And then we just go through the summer and we try to do as many of them as
that's
possible.
Awesome.
And the idea is that the girls, like, we're really busy people during spring and fall. The girls are at school. There's a lot going on. And more often than not, we have to say no. And that's prudent as parents to know when you can say yes.
Yeah.
But in the summer, I want to say yes more than I say no, to give our time to them and not be child-centered, but just as a family, have a great time together. So they'll draw up so many different things, and some of them will be as random.
Yeah, is there some off the wall stuff in there?
I mean, it would be things like, I want to have a water fight. I'm like, okay. and even as simple as, you know, we need to clear out our room, we need to do that, or we really want to get milkshakes at nighttime, or we want to watch a movie late, or, you know, we want to go to the theater and watch something. You know, it will be as normal as that. And as absolute bonkers as, you know, we really want to travel to this little area and camp out one night or something like that. And it's just, I think it's just a great way of saying anything you are excited about, let's see if we can do. And we have to budget that, you know, we have to work that out. This year, I think there's going to be more local stuff that's going on. But yeah, just trying to do different things and give our girls an experience of life where as a family, we're not really scared of trying new things. And that's sometimes one of those, trying new foods. So Miriam will say, you know, this week I want to try a new recipe. And it'll be like, is it going to be good? Is it going to be bad? You know, that type of thing. So yeah, that list is going to be getting drawn up and we're going to be doing activities and foods and different things to kind of get through.
I remember hearing recently somebody talking about the importance of not just family vacation, but like just a family tradition.
Yes.
So if it's a vacation or just other kind of activity that every year you have the same kind of thing and you think, oh, this may be, you know, so some families go to the same place every summer and others are like, don't you want more variety? Don't you whatever?
Yeah.
But there's actually some research and just some level of understanding that for kids growing up, having that sort of tent peg of recreation or rest or getaway is actually really formative and creates a level of nostalgia and comfort. Yeah. When we lived in Vermont, we would go every year, usually in August, for 1 week to Maine on the coast, a little town called Stonington that some church members had introduced us to. And what was great about Stonington, especially for a young pastor who didn't make a whole lot of money, was it wasn't a big touristy town, so it was more affordable. Like you could get an Airbnb for a family of four for, you know, pretty cheap. And because there's just, it was more like a lobster town, you know, basically. But it had some little, you know, shops and ice cream parlor and a little beach. It's not like, you know, Acadia National Park or anything, but it had a little sand beach. And our girls loved it. Yeah. So we would just go every year, usually in August. And just we knew that's what we're doing. We're going to Stonington and we're going to Stonington and going to Stonington. And just the progression of what the girls remembered and what they enjoyed about it. And there was just something really sweet about that. So even if you can't get away or get far away or you don't have quite the budget, having some kind of tradition
that happens each year.
Each year, this is what we're going to do. Yeah. We're going to do this kind of thing. And having that little list, I think that's kind of a tent peg like that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's what we do is the list. And then usually it's a road trip, even if it's on the cheap. Like, even if the road trip's just a couple of days, we'll do that. I feel like a tradition that's happening is that we're seeing Minions every year now with you guys.
That's right. As long as there's a Minions movie.
If there's a Minions movie, we'll the Fergusons there. And the Wilsons go
that's
to the theater.
Coming up, isn't it? Yeah. It's July.
July. Okay. Sometime in July.
Yeah.
So,
we'll have to make sure that we get there. It's on the calendar.
Yeah.
It's a grab bag episode today.
I wish we had a bag.
You know what's really difficult?
I think we should have a bag.
And just make a bunch of questions and pull them out. That we'll do that for next time.
I think we should just do that.
And we should do that because
like five questions
let me
each.
Tell you, it's hard to come up with. We're just coming up with two questions each. Mm. I have found it difficult.
I have not.
You have not?
No.
Okay, you may give me some ideas that you want me to ask you in the future, and I'll come up with
I find it hard answering them, but...
Yeah. So the idea behind the grab bag, if you're new to the podcast, is we each bring two questions for the other person that are surprises. We don't know what the questions are, and we get to see how we respond to... What did we do last time? Who went first last time?
I have no idea.
Okay.
On the list of things to remember in my mind, that is not one of them.
Okay. Well, I'll go first then.
Okay.
My first question for you, Ross.
Actually, I just remembered you went first last time, but carry on.
Oh, I did?
Yeah, because you hit me with a harder one last time. So.
Oh, okay. Well, I have, they're both, I guess, fun, but one is more,
more fun
serious
than
the other. One's kind of playful.
Okay.
Okay. The first one was just, maybe if you can't name the happiest ministry moment, what was a really happy? Because we talk a lot about like funny ministry moments, sad ministry moments, and sometimes we talk about happy ones. But like, if you look back, what was like one of the happiest ministry moments for you?
You're going to really laugh at my next question you've asked me this. Happiest moment of ministry.
Or just one of them.
Yeah. I mean, two immediately come to mind. I preached a Mark's Gospel series, and I did 51 sermons in Mark's Gospel. And it was before COVID, during COVID, and after COVID. Like, it went through that whole season. And at the time, I had a media kind of coordinator, Ben. Ben was fantastic. And we put together a video on, like, what was achieved through that 51 sermon series. And it was like, this is how many words were preached. This is how many words were written in my manuscript. Here's how many people became Christians during that season. And here's how many baptisms we had. And it was, the video was played to the church, and it wasn't like a celebration of me. It definitely wasn't. It wasn't even a celebration of what was achieved. It was more just a celebration of who we are as a church and the journey we've been on. And I remember just being overwhelmingly emotional, not in a sadness, not in a like I'm crying, but more in just the sheer joy of being able to serve. So that, and it was just like 51 sermons is a lot. That's a lot of work, a lot of preparation, a lot of preaching involved in that. Some not very good sermons, some really good ones, like a big mix. And I remember just being incredibly grateful for what I got to do. And it was just one of those really happy moments of, it's done. Like, I just preached through 51 sermons. My church know Mark's Gospel inside out. I'm looking out at the church and I'm like, they're a believer during this series. They're a believer during this series. Yeah. It was just really overwhelming as a kind of moment in terms of serving. And so that's kind of number one. That was several years ago. Number two for me is a bit of a strange one. So when we came to Midwestern Seminary, I've talked about drawing up a list that the girls did. I also drew up a list of things I wanted to achieve here at the seminary. And one of those was to preach in chapel. It was one of those things I thought at the end of my time here at the seminary, four and a half years, there's usually an opportunity for a student to preach at chapel. And I thought, like, for me coming into a season where I felt really tired, I felt like my ministry wasn't going as well personally, as in I felt like I was getting a little bit more aggressive in my preaching, felt like I wasn't being a good shepherd at the time. So I thought this would be a good, if I could preach in chapel, it'd be like 4.5 years of learning and training and developing, and maybe that would be a launch pad into new ministry. So it was just kind of one of those silly things of maybe that's what the Lord will bless us with. Well, in the fall of last year, I was given the opportunity to preach in chapel, and I preached on Philemon, and it was a bit of a shock. I didn't really expect it. I'd finished my preaching classes here. It's not normally done during your studies. It's usually at the end, but I was given the opportunity to preach. And I remember standing up and I looked down and I saw Miriam on the front row and all these students kind of sitting there and different staff members and faculty members. And the thing that caught my attention is as I stood there and I looked down at Miriam and we're both dressed up as chapel, you know, like Dr. Allen is on the front row and you're thinking, oof, the president of the seminary is listening. But you would have think that the happiest moment was the fact that I achieved it. What was the happiest moment was me looking down and seeing Miriam on the front row. And at that point, I'd served just coming up to 12 years in ministry. We had moved to the States in a bit of a whim, a bit of a kind of like, okay, God, you're going to have to do something, change me, develop me. And there just was Miriam sitting. And I just remember being, again, overwhelmingly happy that I get to do this journey with Miriam. Mm. And it was in that moment I thought I could be happy about it. I got to preach in chapel. I got an award at the ceremony. Like all my friends are in front of me. I get to preach God's word. But the thing that I just couldn't believe was Miriam's been on this journey the whole way with me. She doesn't really like being up front. She doesn't really like the attention. She's sitting next to President Allen on the front row. Like all of this for Miriam is like the exact opposite of what she would want to do. And I just remember thinking in that moment, I actually almost struggled to get going with the sermon because it was that she has been on this journey the whole way with me. And if you go back to my early years of ministry, I was a disaster. I've shared this before on the podcast. I was a bit of a disaster. I didn't really know how to serve and I was too arrogant to accept help. And then fast forward like 12 years and here's me going, it's like I'm starting again. And Miriam's still here. She's still with me. So for me, that was a really happy moment. So there are a little bit oddball moments in terms of happiest. There's loads of fun moments, funny moments, but in the overwhelmingly happy moments, those were my two.
Good. Awesome.
So here's my question for you. Okay. And this is why you're going to laugh. You asked me what was the like the happiest moment in ministry. Mm-hmm. And my question for you was, what have you found the toughest in ministry over the years? Like, what is the thing that you go, not necessarily hard because it's emotional, but just you yourself have found difficult to do in ministry?
Yeah.
So the opposite of what you asked me. And that shows our personalities that you've asked me, what's the happiest? And I've asked you, but what do you find?
Hey, everyone. We're excited to share a special opportunity this month to get your next summer book for free. During the month of July, Midwestern Seminary is giving away the entire Puritan paperback series to one lucky participant. The set contains 49 volumes from the Puritans, including titles such as The Bruised Reed by Richard Sibbes, The Mortification of Sin by John Owen, The Heart of Christ by Thomas Goodwin. Enter to win the set this July by visiting mbts.edu/mbtsbooks. That's mbts.edu/mbtsbooks. The Puritans have proved so formative for so many today, so don't miss out on your chance to get the entire set for free. Again, enter to win by visiting mbts.edu/mbtsbooks. Best of luck.
The happiest. Now I've asked you, but what do you find tough?
The toughest has always been the difficult conversation, whether it's having to confront somebody about a sin or just speak to them about an issue that they're not addressing, where you know it could change. It has the potential for going south, for creating a change in the relationship, or because you've upset the peace or the appearance of peace that was there before, or you've hurt somebody's feelings and you're not meaning to do that. I think some people, so there are domineering pastors. There are pastors who, for whatever reason, either enjoy or just it's part of their strategy to be constantly confronting and stirring things up or, you know, what have you. But I think most folks misunderstand or don't understand that most pastors would love to avoid these kind of conversations at all costs. And a lot of them do, or at least try to avoid these conversations at all costs because they don't want to create or at least open the door to a lack of peace. They'd rather the appearance of peace than to create a potential for conflict. And so to confront a divisive member or a gossipy member or just a friend who's engaged in unrepentant sin or someone with an unhealthy habit. I recall having to speak to a friend who I was pretty close with, and he was not loving his wife very well. And he had some other habits too that were along that kind of ran, that coincided with his wife not feeling loved. And it was just kind of a bundle of dysfunction for him. And it was unrepentant sin. And when I had to kind of sit down and like speak to these things, and I'm not yelling at him, I'm not, I'm not even angry with him, but I'm serious. And it's not us goofing around. And he just took it as such a violation because I'm being serious with him. Those sorts of conversations where you're like, this, you're praying that it goes well. But you know it could go poorly, or even if it's not like someone you know freaks out and gets all upset, and but you're hurting their feelings, or you're making them think, oh, I didn't think you know Jared would be the kind of guy that would say something like that, or he would go there with me, and every you know, it's just really difficult, and I think most folks don't understand that. You know, I would love to not be in that room having that conversation, and the reason, and here's the thing, the reason I'm in the room having the conversation is because I care about you.
Yeah.
It's the only reason I would even be in here. I'm not enjoying this.
Yeah.
I don't get off on this sort of thing. That's just not me. And so if I'm having this conversation with you, and I could be wrong. I'm not saying that like I'm right and you're wrong all the time, that I'm perfect in this regard. But if I'm having the conversation with you, it's because I care about you. And I think you knowing this or at least responding to this is more important than this appearance of everything being fine, that I really think there's something that could be harmful to you or to the church, or else I would not be bringing it up.
Yeah.
And I've had to kind of, what you don't know is like, I have spent days and weeks praying and agonizing about how, is there any other, Lord, please let this cup pass from me. Is there any other way not to do this? Until, you know, before I'm even in this room with you having this conversation, I've been trying desperately to figure out how not to have it.
That's what's
tough.
And certainly harder when you know the person well. I had that situation not so long ago, a very good friend. And again, I was like, I really hate the fact that I'm going to have to do this, but I know I have to do it. Do you still feel like you avoid the ones you know you need to do? Or if you felt over the years, you're a little bit more able to rationalize and see, I do need to do this actually. I'll make it worse if I don't do it.
Yeah, it's never gotten easy, but I am, I won't say quick, but I'm quicker to get there now. And I think part of that is just the track record of like, nothing good has ever come from either ignoring it or avoiding it or even putting it off too long.
Yeah,
I've tried that, I've done it, and it, And people don't tend to, it just doesn't get better.
Yeah.
I mean, I can think of like, you know, years ago, and I had a couple of families in it, you know, in my church that were just really being, and I want to say divisive, but they just had really critical spirits. And man, I was just being so patient and so long suffering and so just like, I'm just going to, you know, kill them with kindness. And, you know, I'm just going to be really patient with them and pray that they snap out of it. And the longer I went without addressing it, the worse it got.
Yeah.
Like they did not get better on their own. And I guess some folks do. They feel convicted and they repent. But others, like, you're the shepherd there. You've been stewarded this situation. There's no, it'd be nice if pastoral ministry was just all the stuff that you wanted to do or that was fun to do. But pastoral ministry means leading in tough areas. And so I think, over the years I've just learned it, you know, I'm certainly not at the point where like I enjoy it or look forward to it, but I've gotten to the point now of thinking it's not going to get better if I put it off. I do think also having the conversation, I'm probably a little more, I'm just older. And so I think maybe I'm a better listener, I guess. And I don't think I was ever ungentle in trying to approach these things, but I'm probably more gentle than I was previously. Yeah. I don't know.
I think the letter of Jude, like the longing is not to write to you about issues. Mm-hmm. My longing's to help you see more of Jesus. Yeah. But because I do care, I have to write about this. And I think that seems to be the pastoral sentiment of, we don't want to do this, but because we do love you, we kind of need to do this. And then it's on the member to decide how they respond. And in those moments, the hope is they see the pastor is actually caring.
Yeah.
And more often than not, my experience, I don't know if yours is the same, more often than not, my experience has been people genuinely respond usually well. If you are somebody that's like, I hate doing this, but you know I need to do this.
Right.
Where if you're someone that loves walking into confrontation, usually the response is not great.
Right. So. Yeah.
That's okay. Good. Next one for me.
Okay. Yeah. Here's a fun one. They made a movie of your life. Who should play Ross Ferguson?
Oh, wow. Well,
and it could be somebody, I'll set it up for you. It could be somebody that you think, oh, this is an actor who resembles me.
Yeah.
Or you can think, this is the actor that I think would really play up the nuance and the genius that is my life. They have the artistry.
I mean, so first of all, it's going to have to be someone Scottish because I am not dealing with some fake accent that's being placed on top.
Interesting. Okay.
We've been listening to audiobook on David Livingstone, who is Scottish, and the narrator is putting on a fake Scottish accent, and it is awful. Oh. Absolutely awful. It's some mix between Irish, Scottish, English, and African. I mean, honestly, the guy's awful at it. Anyway, so it's going to have to be someone Scottish, and that's kind of tricky because there's not a lot of obvious Scottish actors that come to mind.
I mean, who you got? You got Craig Ferguson.
David Tennant, but he's kind of tall and lanky and probably not similar to me. So David Tennant would be up there. I think David Tennant would be the Scottish actor. My favorite film is Gladiator. So I feel like I got to get Russell Crowe in. But oh man, this is very difficult. I feel like you probably know exactly who you would have. But David Tennant in Broadchurch, I think just that mood and mentality of somebody that really cares, but also probably more serious than he needs to be.
Okay.
I think that would go a long way. Thinking like, I would really want Denzel Washington, but I don't feel like
for somebody with a Scottish accent. But obvious, now you're going though.
I feel like a mix between David Tennant and Denzel Washington.
Okay,
and I feel like that would cause some problems.
Maybe so.
Really obvious ones.
Okay,
but yeah, I don't have much more than that.
Okay,
because I can't. You put me so on the spot. I can't think of. I bet you, as I walk out, I'll be like, "Oh, that's who should do it."
Well, you can think of it later. That's the peril of the grab bag.
Yeah,
we don't have time to think about these questions.
Do you have someone that you would have play you?
Play me?
Yeah.
Well, I'm thinking like of when I was younger, when I weighed less. People would say, "Anyone ever tell you you look like David Duchovny?" Or William Baldwin. I got those two would be the most.
William Baldwin.
Would be the two most popular ones. So I wouldn't mind either one of those guys. Probably David Duchovny more than William Baldwin.
I've just thought of another actor, but I can't think of his name.
Okay.
Played in Glory Road.
But for you, I thought you were going to say, who do I think should play you?
Don Haskins.
I need to look him up. You know who I think should play me? Kyle MacLachlan.
Don Haskins. He doesn't look like me, but I've really enjoyed films that he's been in.
I think for you, someone like Scoot McNairy. You know who Scoot McNairy is? Yeah, I like Scoot McNairy.
Okay, I'm going to
I think he could do it. But I don't know if he could do the accent, but
Scoot McNairy.
N-A-I-R-Y. What kind of name is McNairy? Maybe it's a Mick.
Yeah, I can see that.
Okay.
Yeah. He's American. But
yeah, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I see
He's got a good face and he's got a cool style.
I think Scoot McNairy. I'm going to have to look more up.
Okay.
I never expected that question. Yeah. That's going to be on my mind all day now.
Okay.
Okay, my question for you is you have lived in and around Kansas City for a while now. Mm-hmm. What is your favorite thing to do in Kansas City? Whether that is eating or activities or just like take the whole city all the way from south to north. What is your favorite thing about the city and activities or food or what you like to do?
I'll give you two, and neither one of them is really Kansas City specific. Well, one of them kind of is. So my favorite thing to do, I'm a very indoorsy person, is to go to the movies. Mm-hmm. And Becky and I both have subscriptions to the local, well, I guess not local, the AMC has a program called A-List or Stubs, and we're A-List members of Stubs, which means you pay a monthly fee and you can see up to 3 movies a week. Now, we don't go that often. There's not even 3 new movies out every week, but we can see 3 movies a week. If you saw 3 movies a month, you pay for your thing. Yeah. So, I mean, you could see a bunch technically free, I suppose. And we just go to the movies a lot.
So why AMC over like B&B theaters or something
that's
like that?
The closest big theater to us is AMC. Mm-hmm. That's the main reason. And it's a bigger chain. So when we're traveling, there's not a lot of B&B, but there's AMC all over the country.
So you can use it outside of Kansas City.
Ah, yeah. Cool. I've used it in California. I've used it in all kinds of places. So go to the movies, but I could do that wherever they're headed. Yeah. Movie theater. The other thing I like to do is we live by a really big lake. We live in a little town north of Kansas City. I don't want to be specific because I don't want stalkers to come find me. I'm one of those kind of people. Like, don't come to my town. It's a little town north of Kansas City. There's a gigantic lake. If you put the clues together, you could probably figure it out. Really big lake. And our house is near the lake, very near the lake, where we're like less than a mile. And we could. And so I walk 3 or 4 times a week when the weather's nice to the lake. And there's hiking trails all the way around through the woods and everything. And I like going for walks. Mm-hmm. And I don't listen to anything. I don't take headphones or anything. No music, no podcast. I just like to listen to my own head and to what's going on around me. And it's nice. I would say when I'm doing like the 4-mile walk and I'm doing it pretty brisk, you know, I'm not a runner, but I don't enjoy the exercise part of it, even though that's kind of why I'm doing it. But I do, I have to be outside every day.
Yeah.
As an indoorsy person, I just know I've got to be outside. And it's nice to be outside and hear birds, and you can see deer sometimes and rabbits, and just, it's good. It's good for me. It's good for my soul. It's good to clear the air. It's not just good for my health. It's just good for my disposition. Mm. I think people who struggle with depression, anxiety, et cetera, should really look into, if they're not already, exercise and getting outside.
Yep.
It probably doesn't solve everything for you, but it could be a huge contributing factor to just a better, state of mind. And so, it's not... Yeah. Where it is specific to the Kansas City area, but I could do that anywhere, I guess. Yeah.
We're the same with walks as a family.
Yeah.
We do a ton of walks.
It's so good.
We walk almost every day and different trail walks in Kansas City. I was surprised you didn't say something food related.
No, food here is not that great.
Mm.
Compared to where I'm from.
Okay.
Yeah. Where I'm from in Texas, especially Houston, where there's a restaurant multiple restaurants every block and all kinds of... The food there is much better than the food here.
We've enjoyed kind of going to different food establishments here purely because it's American, as in we haven't had these foods in the UK. So fairly often we'll try somewhere different, somewhere new, and give it a go and see what it's like.
Yeah.
There's some stories
I'll say even like disappointing, like Kansas City is known for like steaks, Kansas or, Midwest in general because of beef, but Kansas City steaks and, Omaha steaks and like... I mean, you can find good steaks around, but I don't notice it's any different than steaks, unless you're going to pay like a lot of money maybe to go to like a super nice steakhouse, which I'm not going to do. But like it's just in general, by ordering a steak at a restaurant, it's good. I don't see it superior than anything.
You been to Kansas City Zoo recently?
Not recently, no. Mm.
The aquarium is very good.
Oh, okay.
Not the steak.
I was going to say, the steaks at the zoo are amazing.
It's very fresh.
Is this a zebra? What is this? No, but we are getting ready to go. In fact, by the time this comes out, it might have already gone. We have some of our best friends. They come and visit us every summer, usually in July. They have 4 kids and they love the zoo. So we usually go to the zoo once a year. Yeah. So probably around this time, I will be at the zoo maybe.
The new aquarium is very good.
Okay.
So we like that as a family. And I really like the penguins. So talking about peaceful, like going around a lake, if you go into Kansas City kind of penguin area, you can go downstairs and there's the glass viewing areas. It's dark. It's really quiet. It's kind of cold.
Yeah.
And you can just watch the penguins like dash about.
It's nap zone.
I feel like that is the most peaceful place in Kansas City for me, is the little penguin viewing area.
I like that. Well, that's very cool. All right, some good questions on the grab bag.
I feel like I need to go and look at more actors and see.
That's what you need to do. I need to go eat some more steaks and figure out if I'm accurate about my... if you enjoy the podcast, dear listener, give us a good review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. And until next time, may Jesus be big in your church. You've been listening to the For the Church podcast, hosted by Jared Wilson, found online at ftc.co. This resource is brought to you by Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary in Kansas City, Missouri, where we train leaders for the church.